Hello, and welcome to this episode of Criminal Mischief, the Art and Science of Crime Fiction. I'm D.P. Lyle. Today, I want to talk about private investigators, or PIs for short. What makes them such wonderful characters and why you should consider choosing them for your novel or your series. Now, don't get me wrong, cops are great. Love to write about cops. There's some great cop characters out there. But remember, cops have rules and regulations. They don't always follow them, but they have rules and regulations. They're more restricted in what they can do. They can't put a tracking device on your car. They can't tap your cell phone. They can't break and enter. They can't, at least they're not supposed to do all that. Private investigators, on the other hand, end up doing all of that stuff. They're more variable and they're quirkier. They come in all kinds of sizes and shapes and ages and genders and flavors, you name it, all kinds. Some of them are ex-military types, and some of them are just everyday folks with a knack for sniffing out wrongdoing, and some of them are little ladies with cats. Those tend to be the most dangerous ones. And so this wide variety of characters that you can create when you're looking at a private investigator is what is so fun about them, not only reading about them, but also writing about them. Now, private investigators can be licensed or they can be unlicensed. They can just be people who snoop around. Now, if you got a licensed investigator, again, you got rules to contend with. But if you take people that are more off the radar, that are fixers or investigators or people who just do stuff, and they don't have to carry a license, they don't have to protect that, and they can break the law at will as long as they can get away with it, those are really, truly great characters. You know, think Jack Reacher. I mean, he's basically an investigator, if you will. He gets involved in these things. He doesn't have a license to do all that stuff, but he breaks the law all the time, but he does stuff. And if you go through the fictional PI world, they're populated with some of the most iconic characters you can imagine. You know, Sherlock Holmes, Sam Spade, Philip Marlowe, Kinsey Millhone, Mike Hammer, Lou Archer, Dave Robichaux. The list goes on and on and on of the characters that private investigator types are the protagonist. Let's look at a few of them, and hopefully you'll meet some new ones here and revisit some old ones. But just to see how they all are a little bit different and how you can take, really the sky's the limit. When you create your investigator, it could be, like I said, ex-military. It could be the little old lady that writes greeting cards for a living. It can be anywhere in between. And they don't always follow the rules, but they almost always have an unusual view of the world. It's a little more cynical. It's a little more quirky. And again, they're allowed to paint outside the lines a whole lot more. So let's look at James Crumley, C.W. Sagru. And this is from The Last Kiss. Great, great, great book. When I finally caught up with Abraham Traherne, he was drinking beer with an alcoholic bulldog named Fireball Roberts in a ramshackle joint just outside of Sonoma, California, drinking the heart right out of a fine spring afternoon. Trahan had been on this wandering binge for nearly 3 weeks, and the big man, dressed in rumpled khakis, looked like an old soldier after a long campaign, sipping slow beers to wash the taste of death from his mouth. The dog slumped on the stool beside him like a tired little buddy, only raising his head occasionally for a taste of beer from a dirty ashtray sat on the bar. Wow. Don't you just love that? Don't you love the dog? This guy obviously is salty. He has an odd look on the world, and he's there to begin an investigation. So we're going to follow him. We're absolutely going to follow him. As I said, they can be cynical. a lot of private investigators are cynical. A lot of them had been cops before, and the cynicism they brought from that job, but not only with administration and the powers to be, but also with the world in general and the miscreants they have to deal with. And they bring that and they go out in the private world, and then that baggage comes with them. So probably my favorite of all private investigators of all time, Philip Marlowe, Raymond Chandler's creation. And this is from The Long Goodbye. When I got home, I mixed a stiff one and stood by the open window in the living room and sipped it and listened to the groundswell of traffic on Laurel Canyon Boulevard and looked at the glare of the big angry city hanging over the shoulder of the hills through which the boulevard had been cut. Far off, the banshee wail of police or fire sirens rose and fell, never very long completely silent. 24 hours a day, somebody is running, somebody else is trying to catch him. Out there in the night of 1,000 crimes, people are dying, being maimed, cut by flying glass, crushed against steering wheels or under heavy tires. People are being beaten, robbed, strangled, raped, and murdered. People were hungry, sick, bored, desperate with loneliness or remorse or fear, angry, cruel, feverish, shaken by sobs. A city no worse than others. A city rich and vigorous and full of pride. A city lost and beaten and full of emptiness. It all depends on where you sit and what your own personal private score is. I didn't have one. I didn't care. I finished the drink and went to bed. Oh, yeah. Marlowe is cynical. And Chandler is such a beautiful wordsmith. He just writes so well. And those of you who haven't visited Raymond Chandler, I can't imagine there are any of you out there. Please do. Another great character is Walter Mosley's Easy Rollins. This whole series is great. But by far, the iconic book, Devil with a Blue Dress. They also made a great movie out of it. And it's a movie you should see if you haven't, but for sure read the book. It's fantastic. So here we go. I was surprised to see a white man walk into Joppy's bar. It's not just that he was white, but he wore an off-white linen suit and a shirt with a Panama straw hat and bone shoes over flashing white silk socks. His skin was smooth and pale, with just a few freckles. One lick of strawberry blonde hair escaped the band of his hat. He stopped in the doorway, filling it with his large frame, and surveyed the room with pale eyes, not a color I'd ever seen in a man's eyes. When he looked at me, I felt a thrill of fear. But that went away quickly, because I was used to white people by 1948. I had spent 5 years with white men and women, from Africa to Italy, through Paris, and into the fatherland itself. I ate with them and slept with them, and I killed enough blue-eyed young men to know that they were just as afraid to die as I was. Wow. You kind of know Easy Rollins once you read that, and you kind of know what kind of person he is and character and everything, and the story goes from there. Dashiell Hammett created Sam Spade, one of the greatest PIs ever. And this is from The Maltese Falcon. Samuel Spade's jaw was long and bony, his chin a jutting V under a more flexible V of his mouth. His nostrils curled back to make another, smaller V. His yellow-gray eyes were horizontal. The V motif was picked up again by thickish brows rising outward from thin creases above a hooked nose. And his pale brown hair grew down from high flat temples in a point on his forehead. He looked rather pleasantly like a blonde Satan. Well, I think you can see who Sam Spade is, and of course, what an iconic character that is. Robert B. Parker created Spencer. TV series, all the books, they're carried on now by other authors, but Parker Spencer is truly an iconic private investigator. And this is from God Save the Child. If you leaned back in the chair and cranked your neck hard over, you could see the sky from my office window, delft blue and cloudless, so bright it looked solid. It was September after Labor Day, and somewhere the corn was probably as high as an elephant's eye, and the kind of weather when a wino could sleep warm in a doorway. "Mr. Spencer, are you listening to us?" I straightened my head and looked at Roger and Marjorie Bartlett. "Yes, ma'am," I said. "You were just saying about how you never dealt with a private detective before, but this was an extreme case and there seemed to be no other avenue. Everybody who comes in here tends to say about the same thing to me." "Is he cynical?" "You bet. And what a great character. I mean, Spencer is fantastic." Basically, each of my four thriller series star private investigators. The one exception, Samantha Cody, was a cop, but then she lost her job and she kind of ended up going around and solving problems for other people. But the others are not cops and they're not really private investigators in the sense that they're licensed PI. Dub Walker, for instance, Dub Walker, I think the opening or this scene from Stress Fracture, the first of the books in that series, kind of explains who he is. "You ain't gonna like it," Sheriff Luther Randall said. My gut nodded. "Let's do it." Life morphed into slow motion as I followed Luther down the hallway toward Mike's bedroom. My legs felt heavy, and my shoe soles grabbed the carpet as if trying to hold me back, as if they knew what lay ahead. "My name is Dub Walker. I'd worked more than 100 homicides in my career, as an MP for the U.S. Marines, as a lab tech with the Alabama Department of Forensic Science here in Huntsville, as a trainee and consultant in Quantico with the FBI's Behavioral Assessment Unit, and as a crime scene and evidence analyst on cases all over the country. I'm considered somewhat of an expert in this stuff. I've written a dozen books on these subjects, and if you do that, people automatically think you know a bunch about it. Maybe I did, maybe I didn't. Could go either way. It was that perspective reality deal. I'd seen angry spouses slice, dice, and shoot each other. Drug deals gone sideways, murders for hire, gang massacres, mafia hits, and a few killings that didn't fit into any pigeonhole. I'd seen victims of shootings, poisonings, beatings, fires, explosive devices, and one-way flights off tall buildings. I'd seen firsthand the work of serial killers who tortured, mutilated, cannibalized, and even preserved victims. None of this prepared me for this one. And then Jake Longley, my latest series, and Rigged, my latest book in that series. Jake is a totally different character because he sees the world very humorously. He's not like Dub. He's not like Sam. He's not pragmatic. He is just quirky. So this is the beginning of Rigged, which is the latest Jake Longley book. Life runs in odd circles, creates circumstances you never see coming, could never predict, makes for strange bedfellows. As my grandfather was quick to say, life can park your butt in some unpleasant locales. Love that guy. More so than my father, Ray, who can be a pain in the ass. Not that I didn't love him, just that he was a bit intense for my taste. I think he and I tolerated each other as much as anything else. I often wished he was more like his father, but that train hit the rails decades ago. Back to parking your butt in unpleasant places. Right now, mine had found itself on an uncomfortably hard wooden chair behind the defense table in the Gulf Shores Municipal Courthouse. I wasn't sure what caused the most unease, the seat, the fact that I was the defendant in the proceedings at hand, the stack of charges levied against me, or the sullenness of Judge Ruth Corvas. The woman was all decked out in her black robe, shoulders hunched forward, sharp eyes following my attorney as he walked back and forth before her, offering his closing argument. She looked like a hawk, eyeing prey, maybe a turkey vulture sizing up carrion. Made me reconsider having waived my rights to a jury trial. I was good with people, always had been. That's one reason Captain Rocky's, my bar restaurant, was so successful. I was the face of the operation. A jury might like me. Judge Corvas, less so. She looked like she'd eaten a bad taco or too many barbecued beans. And then finally, we'll switch gears to my Kane Harper series. And Bobby Kane is the protagonist of that. And he is a no-nonsense character, trained by a gypsy family when he was growing up and then later by the military. And so this is from Skin in the Game, the first Kane Harper thriller. That Bobby Kane made it into the military was a minor miracle. For one thing, he had a criminal record, juvenile, sealed, and later expunged, but still a record. Surely the military had access to that part of his life. He had limited formal education, some homeschooling as his gypsy family scurried from town to town, thanks to Aunt Dixie and his adoptive parents, the Canes, had pushed him to a high school diploma. But his education had always felt haphazard, incomplete. Degree in hand, he enlisted in the U.S. Army. Amazingly, they accepted him. Even though his final 2 years of school were at a military academy, he had no real military connections to smooth the path. Everything indicated that his Army career would be uneventful. Things changed a few months in, thanks to the not-so-formal education he had received from his gypsy family. Several of the parents in the troop had offered lessons that aren't available in real school, things like how to run a con, how to lift a wallet or a watch, or empty a purse in a heartbeat. Day, night, alone, in a crowd, each required a different approach and skill set. For Kane, these lessons most often came from Uncle Al, Aunt Dixie, and Uncle Maurice, known as Uncle Mo. Fighting lessons were particularly intense. No fight is fair was Uncle Mo's mantra. The guy who fights fair loses. He taught Kane to box, wrestle, and what he called grappling, the art of taking someone of any size down with a single punch, or a literal snap of the finger, or out cold with a chokehold. Most of Kane's brother opponents back then had been years older and much larger and stronger, but he learned quickly. The key, according to Uncle Manny, was hand strength. Strong hands win fights. Uncle Al taught him that in a fight everything was a weapon. Fist, feet, elbows, knees, your head, a stick, a stone, a chair, a lamp, and of course a knife. He showed Bobby where to hide knives in his clothes and shoes, even how to construct those that could be secreted in belts, hats, pocket linings, seams. Aunt Dixie gave him a master class in the art of throwing. And of course, Bobby Kane was a master with a knife. He could also a second story guy. He could get in and out of place. He learned all that as a child. And then the military used him for assassinations, as it were. And the story goes on. But if you look at each of these characters, each of the private investigative types, they're not cops. They're not, don't have rules and regulations. They may or may not be licensed PI, you know, Sam Spade and Philip Marlowe were always on the verge of losing their license, what little they had or cared about. But they would gladly give up their license to solve the problem, to help the person who was in need, to move forward. If you follow each of these stories and these characters, and I particularly recommend Raymond Chandler to any crime writer, you know, the noir giants from back in the day are all wonderful, but I think Chandler was a step above everybody else. Crumley's also great. Parker Spencer goes without saying. But to me, the beauty of living in the world with a private investigator type is that the world is really wide open. You can create any kind of character you want. They can have any kind of social problems and relationships and addictions and foibles. And you can have anything that you want because, well, they're not going to get fired from their job. You know, if they stay drunk for 3 days, you know, you're probably not going to be on the police force. And if you do something stupid, you're probably going to lose your license. But if you're not on the police force and you don't have a license, who cares? So they can do what they want to do. They can also approach solving the crime from the outside in. Now, a lot of them end up with friends in the establishment, if you will, in the police department. And that's how they gather information. But remember, they can do what they want to do. As long as you can craft a good scene that they can get in, get out, get what they need, get away with it and not get caught, or Let them get caught and see what happens after that. The point is that these characters are broad and deep and can be almost anything you want them to be. And they're really, really, really fun to write. You can also create secondary characters, their sidekicks, the people that work for them, the people that they gather information from. The world is so huge in the private investigator type world that you can do what you want. They can be set anywhere. They're not restricted by the location of a police department or a city. They can move around. You know, Jack Reacher goes all over the planet, it seems like. But you can also take an ex-cop and move them into the PI world. That has happened so many times through literature. A lot of the PIs that we read about actually started as cops somewhere. And they're written all over the world. You know, there's U.S., there's Britain, the Scandinavian. Some of the Scandinavian stories are fantastic and with great characters, and both cops and private investigator types. One of the best, of course, was Michael Blomqvist and Elizabeth Salander working together in the Millennium series. Salander, obviously, she's a hacker, but she's a private investigator. She's hired to do a job. What a great character, one of the great characters of all time. And Blomqvist is an investigative reporter, so he's not in the cop world, though he has connections there. So I think if you look at all of these, you look at that, you read some of these stories, when you start creating, you decide you're going to write a story and you're trying to decide, am I going to write about a police officer or am I going to write about a PI? I recommend going the PI route because the world is so wide open. So anyway, I hope this gives you some food for thought on how you're going to develop your own stories and your own characters. And I hope a lot of these things are useful. Also, look at some of these things. It'll be posted like I always do on my website and my blog. Look at some of these stories and look at some of these writers and characters and go pull some of them down and read some of these iconic private investigators. I think you will see a whole different world, and it will inform your own writing and give you some wonderful ideas. So until next time, this has been D.P. Lyle here on Criminal Mischief, the art and science of crime fiction. See you down the road.